Welcome to the Love Irish Food Green Ireland podcast series, episode 4. I'm your host, Conal O'Moran. Love Irish Food is dedicated to sustainable and local Irish food and drinks brands, supporting the many, many, many thousands of local jobs and communities that depend on the Irish food industry. Please visit loveirishfood.ie for a full list of your local brands. In this series, we'll be looking at topics affecting the Irish food industry, ranging from the shop local movement, funding, selling online, digital marketing, and so much more. We have exceptional food and drink talent lined up to give you their top tips, insights, and knowledge, and all in a convenient-sized 30-minute bite. In this episode of Green Ireland, I'm delighted to welcome via Zoom from Cork, Maxine Hyde, who runs Ballymaloe Foods in Little Island, Cork. The company was established 30 years ago by her mother, Yasmin, the daughter of Myrtle Allen. And sitting in front of me here at the Dublin Podcast Studio are Tom Cronin and Peter Maguire of Kildare-based Rye River Brewing Company, best known to many of you for producing beer brands such as McGargle's, Crafty Brewing, Grafters, and Solace. On this episode 4, we're discussing a big and very important topic, that's growing an international brand from home. You're all very welcome.
Thank you very much.
Thanks, Conal.
Maxine, I'll start with you since you're so far away. Growing a brand. Now, there are two things. First of all, we live at the edge of Europe on a tiny little island with a wee little population. And outside of the island, there's a massive population, but there are also massive, big brands. How do you feel about taking on those brands and how have you done it?
Well, it's certainly a challenge. I suppose one thing to note, we automatically are at a higher cost base here in Ireland because, you know, Ireland being a small island naturally is a higher cost base, higher wages, higher utilities here. And then we have to import a lot of packaging and then, of course, ship ourselves back to the continent to sell. So we are already kind of at a price disadvantage taking on these big international and I suppose local brands as well when you go to other markets. So you certainly definitely need to have a really fantastic product that you believe is absolute top quality, will attract the attention of consumers, that you then need to really get behind with just so much effort, a bit of intelligence. You really have to know the market and make sure that your product is suitable to the people who are shopping in that market. So there's many different angles to consider when taking on a market.
Well, to those who don't fully or properly understand entrepreneurship, they must be thinking, why do you bother? I mean, you have just given me a list, I don't know, 3, 5, 10 things against you, but you still choose to. I know for a fact that you, for example, are exporting to the very, very other side of the world, to Australia.
Yeah. I suppose, like, I actually sometimes say that to smaller brands and they get an interest from England or France or something. And I say, well, are you selling all over your county and all over your province as a start in Ireland before you necessarily take on, you know, a big new retail market? I guess we definitely want to grow bigger than Ireland. We definitely, you know, would like to see and believe our product has potential. So it's definitely an ambition of ours that we want to be available in further places. And also, I suppose it's a bit of protection as well that, you know, if the Irish economy crashes or it's great to have other channels where you're selling. On top of that, then we would have a lot of importers or distributors that might have been told about our product because thankfully our product is popular in Ireland, and then they might hear about it by someone who's been to Ireland or someone who's lived in Ireland. So we get approached by people saying, I want to bring your product to this country. Then just regarding Australia, I suppose we have around the world, we have a bit of a network of Irish food importers. So that's where the likes of Australia, Canada, some of USA, that's really the only reason we're selling to these far, far away places is to supply the need of the Irish expat who is craving their Ballymaloe relish. It wouldn't be really, we wouldn't take on Australia as just a normal market to the average Australian consumer. It wouldn't be a strategic place for us to try and sell our product just to the amount, the cost of getting a product all the way out to the other side of the world. It has to be for people who are actively looking at it and happy to pay a little bit extra by the time you get it shipped all the way out there.
Let me bring Tom Cronin and Peter Maguire in here, because both Tom and Peter, you are faced with the exact same problem. It's a classic. It's an MBA thesis classic. Low-value item, heavy, awkward, glass, everything against you. You still want to export. Who wants to take that one? It's Peter.
Absolutely. I think it's back to Maxine's point there about having a growth mindset and an ambition beyond your domestic market. We've worked very hard particularly over the last 5 years, to really build a solid foundation in our domestic market. But it's the next step is to take your product outside of that. You have to have a real high quality product to stand out. But you also, for us, the key thing is our partner in that market, because we don't have, we're still a small company. We don't have the footprint of having feet on the street or people on the ground. So we need to partner with somebody who can give us that.
Now, both of you in front of me are not going into this blind, because both of you have big backgrounds in this area. You know exactly the kinds of people, because you were those kinds of people, if I can put it that way, that you're facing. They're, I won't say ruthless is probably the wrong word, but they've got massive budgets and they don't like people trying to eat their lunch. Tom?
Yeah, certainly don't like having new brands emerge and take on both domestic brands or other international brands, I suppose. Fortunately, within drinks industry in Ireland and food, you look at brands like Ballymaloe there, or you take the iconic brands that have, been the pioneers, Guinness, Bailey's, you know. I think there is a trust around Irish brands when you go into international markets. That certainly gives you an opening, but you're vying for the same shelf space or the same tap space on counter. So it comes back to the reputation that you're building domestically. And as Maxine said earlier, you know, you look at your own county first, then you look at your own province or country. Fortunately and unfortunately, we only have 4.8 million people in Ireland. In our category, it only represents about 3.3% of all beer drank. So you have to look externally to grow a business and be profitable and to follow that growth ambition that we certainly have in Rye River. So you have no other decision, I think, but to look into export markets.
I love that you have no other option, because you're nuts, because you have to do it or nothing happens.
Well, within the category size of Ireland, we've certainly, I think, driven category growth, since our establishment in 2013. We've been at the forefront of, I suppose, challenging quality, consistency, and helping, some great breweries in Ireland grow that category. We're probably one sector that has benefited in terms of the pandemic, because retail was at the prominence. Our export market fell apart last year. I suppose our diverse range of brands and our stronghold in Ireland allowed us to capitalize on something that led to a positive, and the positive is that the category has grown.
Now, that's interesting that you say about the diverse brands. Was that deliberately done to have a range, or would it have been better? You're educating me on this one now. Would it have been better to stick with, there is only one Guinness? I know there's, variations on the theme, but there's one Guinness.
Yeah. Well, we brew 30 unique recipes every other week across five brands now. You've mentioned four. We also do a seasonal range that plays to a very niche, specific consumer and craft. So we're a complex brewery, but that has always been the strategy. We are very lucky to have strong retail partnerships in Ireland. And from those brands performing really well in retail in Ireland, it has certainly opened doors in export markets. So our biggest export market would be Italy, for example. And we've had a strong retail relationship with the likes of Isolunga for the last few years. That has arisen from our award-winning portfolio, the amount of World Beer Awards we have, our performance in domestic market. So it's nearly a proof of concept for other retailers to look at, what have you achieved in Ireland in such a short space of time? And yes, we'll trust your brand and consistency.
And has the word Ireland or Irish had it played a part in it? Do they care, or is it just the quality of your beer?
I think,
Peter,
they do care, and it's back to what Tom had said earlier on. There is a feeling internationally a sort of a recognition that Ireland is good for beer and good for food and drinks. There's a quality cue that goes with it. You know, when that green stamp is on your product, it gives a fuzzy feeling. Now, that's great to have, but you have to deliver. You know, when somebody makes the decision to purchase your product, they have to be happy with the quality that you get.
Do you use it? Do you promote it? Is it heavily branded within your brands?
It's part of our brands, but I think it is part of our brands, right? But it's, you know, the brand is so much more than one single aspect. But the part, like you mentioned earlier about the brands that we have, and like we've taken a category approach where we have brands to bring people into the category with maybe easier entry and less hop bombs, if you like, that they can grow into. But we've also brands that, like the seasonal that Tom mentioned, that operate at the top of the category, you know, where people are willing to pay for the exotic ingredients that go into them, you know, €5 for a can, or, you know, so they're a different type of consumer.
But that is down to your brewing skill and your palate, maybe. Explain where the Ireland and Irish comes into there.
I suppose they're almost, like, if we go back to export, you know, the Irish and Ireland piece is part of what gets you in there. You know, it's part of your proposal. But go back to the start, it's your partner. You want your partner to believe in you and your beers and what you've done, and believe in your brand as it approaches. And Ireland is part of that, you know, and part of that stamp. But when you get onto that shelf, it's back to this quality, consistency, delivery for the shopper. That's that gets you your next sale, because it's one thing getting on the shelf, but, you know, to expand your space and to keep your space and to, you know, like, if you think of every time you build a facing, you're making more of an impact with your brand, so that there's more of a signpost for somebody when they're looking for your brand. So it's all part of that overall brand building strategy.
B is for brand, B is for Brexit. Has Brexit, for those who can't see them, I've just seen two grimaces. Who wants to talk about Brexit and exporting?
Yeah, so Brexit, strategically, we've never really immersed ourselves too much in the UK market.
Why? And,
well, historically, we would have felt that we play an everyday craft, and the price per litre, it comes back to building a sustainable business that's profitable. Where, you know, we've been growing our capacity over the last 5-6 years, but we're always touching capacity, and we're at it again this year. We have two new tanks coming in 2 weeks' time from Blackwater Engineering in Cork, 100% Irish tank farm, you know, nice to have, but you've got to manage your volume at times. And the UK has always had a lower price per litre in our eyes for beer than other markets. So we have a saying that people are willing to savour the experience in craft beer and pay a little more, not necessarily in the UK. And, you know, ever more so in the last 12 months, we've seen the price per litre in craft beer, driven by probably the biggest global craft beer brand at this stage, reach an all-time low. Mm. So Brexit, from an export point of view, didn't really impact us. From an import point of view, it did, because we... and I'm widely commenting on this, that we purchase a lot of hand-turned malts from the UK. The reason being is that we can't get that particular style of malting product in Ireland.
So they've got a huge history of it anyway.
They have a huge history, yeah. So we buy a lot of our malt from Norwich, Chris Malt, very large maltster, top 10 in the world, and they provide an excellent product. So Brexit certainly played havoc in the early days in figuring out the transport of that product into Ireland. Now, that's settled at the moment, and I say at the moment because I still think Brexit is probably lost a little in the pandemic, because the pandemic has taken over. It's about to come back, and I don't think we've seen the end of it. In terms of our bottle production, we have our own mold, and we bring bottle in through a UK agent, but that is produced in Russia. And that added a lot of complexity and cost, you know, so Brexit's nearly sorted for the moment, but, you know, for the moment is the way I'd part, you know.
Maxine Hyde, how has Brexit been for you?
Well, it's interesting there, because probably the most suitable consumer for Ballymaloe Relish, retail consumer, is the UK consumer. which, because it's, you know, they speak English language, relish chutney is something that's widely consumed in England, and they have very similar diet to us. Whereas when we try and introduce Ballymoley relish in retail markets around Europe, you kind of have to come at it at a whole different angle. You have to describe it differently. You kind of nearly can't talk about it as just a relish because people don't get it. So very much our biggest growth market in retail is the UK, and we're just actually going into 120 more Tesco's now in September. So we're going to be in nearly 500 Tesco's in September. So it was quite a worrying time for us. Probably the biggest disadvantage it all put us at was the amount of time it took from our people getting our heads around it. Luckily, we haven't had to put in any price increase or anything on our Ballymoley relish selling to the UK. But we have, like Peter and Tom, we have had a bit of complexity and cost in packaging. There's a few other things we get from England, which is, again, it was just more complexity, like vinegar, things you can't get in Ireland, vinegar, sugar, just, again, headaches, increase in transport, delay in transport. We nearly short stocked our UK distributor, which supplies the Tesco stores and Sainsbury's stores, in January. We thought we were all ready to go, and then just at the last minute, it turned out we weren't ready to go. So, I mean, we're definitely committed to the UK, and we're absolutely going to ride out the Brexit waves as best we can. But yeah, just agree on the absolute headache and then some costs as well that we've had to absorb.
Well, anybody in Ireland would be so familiar with the Ballymaloe brand. It's kind of part of what we are. You're a Tato, you're a Guinness. I don't know whether you want to be in the same categories as them. But do the British consumers, do they know you're Irish? Do you promote the Irishness of it? And if you do, how do you do that?
Yeah, well, I mean, it's an honour to be considered the same as category as Tato and Guinness. But we do very much, yeah, we're very much promote ourselves as Irish. I suppose what's very important to the consumers we find in the UK, I mean, number one, you have to get across that this is a product that's going to improve what you're eating. Really always number one, I find you have to tell the consumer how it's going to improve their day, their evening meal. It really, you know, I suppose the consumer is thinking about them. And then the next step, after you convince them it's a fantastic tasting product that's going to improve their meals, then it's about building the story. I suppose one of our competitors in the UK shelves is Branston Pickle, you know, which is now owned by a massive international company that's investment company, you know, what do they call it?
Venture capital company, or private equity.
So getting across our story, our provenance, that we're from this hotel and cookery school down in County Cork in Ireland. We're a small family business that really means a lot to people. Interesting with the Love Irish Food logo, back in the beginning, we thought it was very much a kind of a thing you'd use in Ireland and not necessarily abroad. But we have a German retail importer who absolutely wanted it on all the jars. He found it was like a stamp of kind of a guarantee that we were Irish, if you know what I mean.
You are listening to the Love Irish Food podcast. For more information, visit www.loveirishfood.ie.
Of course, Irish Butter is the big brand in Germany, if I remember correctly, Kerrygold.
Yes.
Going back to the taste and tastings, are you actually going store to store? Say, take your Tesco's. Do you have to do store testings?
We have done pre-pandemic. There has been no kind of discussion of how a tasting would work in the last year and a half, really.
And despite you managed to get your expansion going?
Yes. Yeah. Now, I do think we also got a bit of a lift with the pandemic as well, because suddenly everyone in Britain was staying at home from work and making sandwiches at home. So condiments did get a good boost, which we would have enjoyed also a nice growth there last sort of April, May. But we've been slow and steady with our UK consumer base. We would have started off with a really, really poor rate of sale. And we just had support of Tesco in Dublin, who actually, I believe they've recently partnered with Love Irish Food, but they just kept putting in a good word for us with the UK buyers, the Tesco UK buyers, just to say, this is a great product, just give them time. And thankfully, we've had that time and seeing a great performance now, and hence the increase in stores we're getting in a month or so's time.
And I heard a wry laugh in your voice there, just to remind people you are on Zoom, when you said when you started off, it was small. Encourage others, how small was small?
Oh, Jeannie. So we were in some stores selling 0 and 1 jar a week. We get a weekly report of what we're selling in each store from the UK. And in some stores we might sell no jars for 3 or 4 weeks, or we might sell 1 or 2. And now we're, you know, much more consistent, averaging around 10 or 12 a week. So that's great.
When you were doing zeros, you weren't tempted to go around shop to shop just to move something?
We did. Oh, sorry, in terms of purchasing. No, but we did actually. We got in a camper van and we tasted outside a lot of UK Tesco's. And to be honest, you'd learn a lot about the consumer, even though it's an expensive and exhausting way of doing it. You'd really learn... you'd hear feedback and you'd hear ideas and what they're going to eat it with and what they think it is. And so we did learn a lot, which would have shaped our marketing then for the following years.
Peter and Tom, tastings, are you allowed to do tastings anymore? And how does it all work? How do you bring in your fresh or new customers?
It's difficult now. The alcohol, as you know, is has its own rules, as it were. And definitely since the pandemic, we haven't looked at doing it because of, you know, the hoops you need to jump through, etc., and the considerations you need to make. So
how do you introduce the beer to a new customer?
Well, a lot of our marketing strategies now, and again, the COVID for us has been really beneficial for the whole craft category, really domestically, as a sampling session, in that a lot of people went with their tried and tested green can, red can in the initial days, or black can. And then as it went on, they sort of realized that, okay, if this is going to go on for a period of time, maybe I should look at something that's more sip and savor than something else. So for a craft category as a whole, we got a huge level of new shoppers into the category at that stage. But what we've worked hard at keeping those is through our digital marketing campaign. Like we've really upped the game in that respect.
How?
We've taken, I suppose we now have a full, and I'll let Tom talk more about this, but we now have a full digital marketing strategy. Someone that eats, sleeps, and breathes digital marketing. And I suppose I'll hand over to you, Tom.
How important has that been? And where are you getting the pickups? I know something about digital through the podcasting world. It's mad. It's so granular. It is so telling. And you're almost naked as well, because you know what's not working too quickly, maybe.
Yeah, you've got to have your finger on the pulse. That's the whole thing. You've got to be relevant. You've got to be honest. And you've got to be timely. So, you know, it's an engaging platform. So if someone comes back with a query, you've got to have someone nearly 24/7 that's willing to reply and keep the thread going, the tweet going, the feed going, you know. So it's definitely a platform that requires a lot of energy and effort. But when you get it right,
and
it reaps dividends.
A further cost,
yeah. But it's a cost that if you look at traditional means of advertising in the past, there's a few changes in Ireland. As we know, the alcohol bill has come in January. There's further changes pending next January if they come through. There's segregation in alcohol aisles at the moment within retail. You're not allowed to advertise in close proximity to schools. And there's extremely strong guidelines now with alcohol awareness and alcohol responsibility. And we agree with all of these things. However, it's made you look at how you engage a consumer. So we're very fortunate that we've established a really good reputation, and we have a large range of beers across Ireland. We have a large distribution. We would have about 65-66% distribution in Ireland.
Does that mean that you? Where's the other 34%?
Our beers, well, they're in stores that maybe not be engaging or may not have craft beer yet.
Or space.
I mean, space is premium, but we would have a large distribution network, primarily through great retail relationships and in independent stores. So our beers are available and widely available. Your reputation follows that. So over the last few years, we would have taken a lot of above-the-line ads. We would have taken billboards, buses, the traditional means that maybe the learning that Peter and I and Pamela, our marketing director, also from large beer entity, would have realized this is how, you know, the bigger guys are doing it. So we've got to invest in this. And we'd invest heavily in marketing. This year, as I said, we've taken on the cost of a dedicated digital marketing person. And because other avenues aren't as widely available. Now, saying that, we've also been innovative and we have a brand new brand coming to market next Monday, national distribution, 5 SKUs, and it's under the Rye River brand. And we can't wait for this to hit the shelves.
It's a neat segue for me to ask about the actual namings of the beers, because I love my gargles, but you know why I love it, because it's very, very Irish. Gargle, it's an Irish term. Do these names travel? Do they resonate outside of the diaspora? You mentioned Italy.
Yeah.
They wouldn't know McGargle from a Colosseum.
Would you believe Italy is an unusual market in that with the McGargle's brand, they actually got the family aspect of the McGargle's brand. They couldn't pronounce it, but they got the McGargle's brand. And that's... We felt that while that was a plus in one side, it also has held us back in other opportunities. In that the brand isn't as easy to communicate. And I suppose if we go back, like we've been 2 years now developing, almost 2 years developing our Rye River Brewing Company brand that launches next week. We're very proud of it. We're super excited. I think a few of us have knots in our stomach because it's the culmination of a huge amount of work. But it's also the first step on the next, part of the journey.
Because what are you hoping for it? I know nothing at all about it. So what are you expecting or hoping for?
Well, we've created a brand that will compete not only in Ireland but internationally. And that will be much, much more interesting and appealing to the wider craft beer consumers, but also general beer consumers that might be interested in coming into the
category.
And
you chose the name deliberately for that?
Yes, because if you look at the famous breweries around the world and the famous brands around the world, I think it's we couldn't find one that wasn't a brewery-led brand, you know. So from Sierra Nevada Brewing Company or Lagunitas Brewing Company, the brand is the brewery, and they link back. And we felt we've been missing that. And you know, the feedback, we've done consumer research, like we've done everything the big companies would do to validate, to test our thinking, and just to make sure that we weren't missing something that we're too deep in to see, if you like. And that's what we see. The Rye River Brewing Company, the brewery is already quite famous in craft beer circles for the awards it's won. You know, the fact that it is multi-branded and offers offerings to different consumers and needs and shopper needs, etc., be it in on-premise or off-premise. But this for us is the next step, and it's something that we see as being opening up a market rather than being targeted.
If I could just come in there, I suppose the ultimate goal is to be an international brewery based in Ireland rather than an Irish brewery playing an international space.
Okay.
Like and I that, think this yeah. brand is going to allow us to do that.
Great. Now, Maxine, you have a simple brand, Ballymaloe, but within that, obviously, you have sub-products because there is the relish and then there is the there's a ketchup as well, isn't there? Because I know these because... And I think I said this to you off air. My daughter in Australia insists on having it exported out to her, courtesy of the Bank of Dad. So that in itself is her endorsement. How far or how wide can you bring the Ballymaloe brand? And does it resonate beyond? Do people see Ballymaloe Ireland, or is it just Ballymaloe that happens to come from Ireland?
it's an interesting question. I've been learning there, listening to the, I'm excited to see the Rye River brewery launch. But it's a tricky one because beyond the UK, it's a name that's quite hard to pronounce. We have actually, we've trialed calling it a gourmet ketchup in USA because relish is something that's a completely different product in the USA. So we, I suppose food service then it's a little bit easier exporting food service. We're doing a good bit of export in the northern kind of European countries to that sort of kind of premium casual dining, you know, gourmet burgers, that sort of sector. And we find that's a good bit easier because we educate the food service distribution companies. We go and meet the sales team, we educate them, and they go on then and educate the chef or the food buying person. So it's not like a big mass marketing job needed to do. But I think we have a lot of work to do before we launch Ballymaloe nationally in somewhere like France or Germany, and potentially would consider going with a different name to really make the most out of it, because it's a hard name to pronounce.
Please don't. I love Ballymaloe.
Is it the word relish? There's a good bit of work to be done. And I suppose we've definitely learned lessons by jumping too quickly into a retail partnership in a new country. And sales then have just been much too slow. And it's one thing to try and, you know, tell people about Ballymaloe, but if you're also trying to tell them what relish is and what it does and why you should pay a bigger price for it, it's just too much work. We don't have the money to try and to do that work. So it's something we're openly discussing at the moment. To be honest, we've so much growth to do in the UK anyway. We're not in any urgency to really launch nationally in a new country, but it's something definitely in our long-term aim. We just need to spend a bit more time making sure we get it right before we Tom, go big on a market.
Tom wants to come in here, and I hope Tom is going to say, "Don't change Ballymaloe Island."
No, I'm not. I'm actually going to say, we've been that soldier, you know. We've been that soldier who's struggled to explain what the brand is and pronounce it. And it was a fundamental reason 2 years ago. We met a very large retailer in a market, and they loved the beers. They were able to brand call him after trialing him on a Sunday. We met him on a Monday morning, but we were struggling to explain the brand. And when you're explaining, you're losing. And okay. I think that was the light bulb moment for Peter and I to come back and go, okay, you know what? We've got to come up with an international brand because it won't resonate everywhere. And we were in the States back in 2015 and 16 and quickly put the tail between our legs and got back out of it because we were explaining, and it's a very different market. Hopefully the international Rye River Brewing Company brand will allow us not explain and just deliver volume. But whether you're a relish or a beer, it's amazing how similarities can come across when you enter international markets.
Well, I'm going to have to wrap it up here. So the very, very best of luck with the new brand and the international export. And the same goes to you, Maxine Hyde, down in Cork. And I hope that the expansion into Tesco's, I have to give a big shout out to Tesco if they're backing you that well. Well done, Tesco, because it's a very, very good thing. And just going to ask the lads, are Tesco backing you here as well?
Yes, very much so.
Okay, well, that's a well done, Tesco. That is it from episode 4 of the Love Irish Food series. My thanks to Maxine, to Peter, and to Tom. And if your business is in Irish food or in Irish drink, do find out more about us at loveirishfood.ie. And do listen back to previous episodes, all available online. From me, Conal O'Moran, thanks for listening.
The Love Irish Food Podcast. For more information, visit www.loveirishfood.ie.